Have you ever wondered what it really takes to scale a business that's built around you, your personality, your passion, your name, your face? It's a question that haunts many entrepreneurs when you start with a dream, a personal mission, and suddenly you're the brand. But as your business grows, how do you ensure that it doesn't outgrow the essence of who you are? And how do you scale it past your brand without diluting it and without ending up an intrinsic part where the business relies on you being part of it? Well, today we'll be discussing this and more with my special guest, Chris Ducker, a name synonymous with turning personal brands into thriving businesses. Chris isn't just any entrepreneur. He's a strategist, a mentor, and the brain behind the methods that have allowed personal brands to become global names without losing their personal touch. He's helped business owners maintain their identity at the heart of their businesses, whilst ensuring that as their business expands, it continually reflects the values and the missions it was built on. With a story that takes us from overcoming personal adversity to building a business empire, Chris is here to share his blueprint for scaling a personal brand. So if you've ever felt stuck, wondering how to grow without losing you in the process, this episode is for you. Welcome to De-Stress Your Business, the podcast where we show you how to get incredible results in your business without constant stress. I'm Alexis Kingsbury, a serial entrepreneur and founder at Air Manual. And today I'm joined by Chris Ducker. Welcome to the podcast, Chris.
Hey, man. Good to see you.
Yeah, well, it's been ages. For those at home, we literally met up last week. So, Chris, I'd love to first people to understand like a little bit about your journey and what kind of crystallized your understanding around kind of focusing on scaling your personal brand business and indeed writing your fantastic books, including Youpreneur, which I've got a copy here. So yeah, talk us a bit about your story.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been, I'm a sales and marketing guy. That's what I've done ever since I left school. And I guess even looking back on it now, retrospectively, as I'm getting older, I'm getting a little bit more sentimental. I like to romanticize these things a little bit. And looking back on it, you know, I was building a personal brand long before I became an entrepreneur, long before I built my first business or bought my first business or sold my first business, right? And really, at the very core, at the very, very core of what a personal brand is, it's your reputation. It's what people say about you when you're not at that business conference or when you're at that coffee meeting or at that dinner party or whatever it is, right? But that's kind of like the core value of a personal brand. It's your reputation. It's what you're known for. But what I have developed and what I've helped hundreds and hundreds of others develop over the last sort of decade or so is a true business philosophy based on that personal brand and the focus of building a business based around your expertise, your personality, your very specific story arcs that you create through your career. And it's honestly, it's a joy to do the work that I do every single day. I still own and operate multiple businesses and still have a whole bunch of employees and all that good stuff. But all that is run by other people now. So what I get to do day to day is to talk to folks like you, spreading the good word, so to speak, of what it's like to be what I call a youpreneur and all of the facets that go into creating a lifestyle based around your expertise and the people that you want to serve. And so for me, there's no other real way to build a business, I think, regardless of whether you're leaning into utilizing your personal name or whether you're building a brand-based business with you as the front person for that, aka Virgin Richard Branson, for example. And so there's no other way to build a business as far as I'm concerned. And it's just one of those things that I'm just uber passionate about and I love talking about it.
Yeah, really nice. And in terms of your journey, like so many successful entrepreneurs, like it's not been always been an easy ride. Where have some of the perhaps some of the hard moments sort of come along and what did you take from them to kind of go take it all to another level?
Yeah, I mean, the real big realization for me was that in late 2009, I burnt out. And we're talking like time in a hospital bed on an IV for liquids and being treated for acute exhaustion and dehydration, mild depression, anxiety, and a host of other stuff. And so through that recovery period of 2010, not only did I start taking my health and my wellness, both physically and mentally, a lot more seriously, mm-hmm. but the flip side of that was, well, I've already got a business with 180 employees. We've just literally hit our first $1 million year in turnover. What's broken? Because I should be top of the world here, and I've just come out of hospital. So there's something wrong. Something's broken, clearly. And throughout the course of 2010, yes, the diet got better. Yes, I started taking my health more seriously. But most importantly, from an entrepreneurial standpoint, I hired 8 people to replace me in 1 year. So it just goes to show you how many different hats I was wearing every day. And now we fast forward all this time later, and you know, I'm probably one of the, you know, the master delegators that you'll ever come across, because something hits my desk or my inbox, I'm like, whose job is this?
Nice.
Like, I'm not doing it. Like, there's got to be someone else that can do this for me. And so, yes, it's great and everything. And, you know, outside looking in, best-selling books and events and speaking and all that good stuff. But there have been tough times. There have been pitfalls and big lessons learned. But I stand by the concept of building that business around you, because I feel so passionately about the way that we connect as humans. We want to do business with other people, right? And so I think it's a lot easier to trust a person once you get to know them and what they can do for you than it is to trust a company name or a logo. And so, you know, you put the systems and the processes in place and you move forward, which is exactly what we've done.
Yeah, I love that. And I think one thing that has been a similar journey for me around that, almost being so terrible at some of the delegation stuff that almost getting to that breaking point and then going, actually, like it sort of helps unlock something. But one thing that you mentioned there is that you then responded by essentially bringing in 8 people to cover all those hats. For a lot of business leaders out there, they'll be thinking, well, yeah, there's not enough budget there to like bring in 8 people.
I get that.
How did you approach that? How was that possible? And what advice would you have for other people who kind of feel in that situation where they're just at breaking point? And as you say, like pretty decent revenues, but maybe not necessarily like amazing profit. So how are they going to suddenly find enough?
We were because we literally sold the business last year, but we were in an industry that was very manpower heavy. It was the business process outsourcing or BPO industry. You know, you were never going to make, you know, a whole bunch of money with having 30 employees. It just wasn't going to happen. And so we knew that going in, that it was a volume play. It wasn't a margin play. Mm-hmm. More bums on seats, answering calls, making calls, setting appointments, generating leads means more money at the end of the year. And, you know, overall, though, the industry was about a 12 to 15% profit run rate. And we were almost double that for the vast majority of our time in business, for the vast majority. And the reason why is because we didn't have any major turnover when it came to our middle and upper and executive management. And that's a big deal in that industry. There's a lot of turnover at that level in that industry. And so, yeah, although margins were okay, we were in a position at that point that enabled us to be able to make the investment in a number of different roles to ultimately make my life a little bit easier. But I appreciate, obviously, not everybody's going to be in that position where they can say, well, I need to hire 8 people, 6 people, 5 people, whatever it is, 50 people, right? Yeah. Like, not everyone's going to be in the position where they say, well, I need to hire 8 people and I'm just going to go ahead and do it. We've got the budget. We had the budget, but not many people are in that position. But the one thing that I believe everybody can and should do on a regular basis is what I call my 3 list of freedom exercise. And it's a very, very simple exercise to do. I talked about it in my first book, which celebrates its 10th anniversary next month, which is
congratulations.
Wild, you know, over 100,000 copies sold. Very, very happy with that book and the results it's got people all over the world. But like this exercise is so simple to do, yet such a massive game changer. And I'll break it down for you and everybody listening. So what you do is you get a piece of paper and you draw 2 lines down it, creating 3 columns. And on those 3 columns, you're going to write in column number 1, all the things that you don't like doing day to day as a business owner. So all the stuff that when it sort of hits your, you know, notification pops up on your calendar, you're like, oh, and you kind of procrastinate. You do the whole kind of drag and drop thing, right? I'll do that tomorrow, right? So that goes in the second column is a list of all the things that you can't do or you struggle doing fundamentally. So it doesn't mean that you don't like doing them, but you're not particularly that great at it, right? Mm. Like you might enjoy designing logos, but unless you're an actual full-on graphic designer, there's probably somebody out there that can do it better than you, right? So that's a list of all the stuff that you can't really do, but you don't necessarily hate doing in that second column. But then in the third column, this is the most important column, is a list of all the things that you feel as the business owner that you are, as a head honcho that you are, that you shouldn't actually be doing. And this is where the de-stressing comes out of play. Because what happens is all the stuff that you put in that column, you might really like doing. You might actually be really good at doing. But the bigger question here is, should I actually be doing it? Or is my time, my energy, my mental bandwidth, is that better spent on doing something else, on more higher level activities like strategizing for growth or new products or, you know, offers, services, experiences, spending more time with my top 20% clientele? You know, should I be focusing on that stuff rather than doing this stuff? And once you've got those three columns in front of you, those three lists, you've ultimately got a blueprint to be able to then start kind of pairing off some of those tasks into different roles. And if you can only afford to hire one person to take 50% of that stuff off your plate, then hire that one person. If you can afford to hire two or three, then hire the two or three. But you can start slowly and build it up, obviously.
That's really powerful. I think that's something that I've always found quite surprising, you know, when working with my own clients, where I can see that they're held back because they're doing a whole host of things in these columns, but it can feel like such a big challenge and like, you know, how could I possibly hire someone to do these things? And I think, as you say, that even if you, once you've got it out there, like once you've got it captured, it makes it so much easier to then say, well, actually, which of these things could someone do? And sometimes you kind of end up drawing a circle around a few of them connected and go, well, actually, that looks like a marketing assistant role, or that looks like a sort of sales support role and whatever.
Exactly.
And often I think the most powerful is actually to identify the really junior roles that can support that, because A, low budget, but B, it's like quite quickly they can take a huge amount of stuff off your plate. So yeah, I really like that as an approach. In terms of then, where would you like to see those youpreneurs, those entrepreneurs that they get it, they understand that there is a huge opportunity to build their business with them as the personal brands, the face of it, of getting out there, and we can talk more about why that is. But like for them that's doing that, where would you expect them to therefore be spending their time?
Well, I mean, ultimately, what are we doing? We're building a business based around our expertise, right? And what only we can bring to the party in terms of the offers that we create, products, services, experiences for our prospective clients and our current clientele. So that's what we should be doing. That's exactly what we should be focused on. We should be focused on furthering that customer lifetime value. We should be focused on delivering, you know, offers, products, programs, etc., that only we can deliver in the way that we deliver them, and delivering them at a really, really high level as well. Really high level. Like one of my favorite phrases is to surprise and delight. You want to surprise people and you want to delight people. And if you can do that by being a service provider in one way or another, then you're already ahead of the game. You're already ahead of the game because there's a whole bunch of people that are delivering on their promises, on their deliverables, but they're not surprising and delighting. They're not going the extra step or two or three. And that's what you should be doing.
Fantastic. I really like that because I think you're right that we've all come across service providers, you know, whatever it is, where we've been looking for, you know, kitchen designers or whatever it is, like, and it's like, yeah, they kind of do a bit of what I expected. Maybe there are a couple of drop balls or whatever. And yet people really stand out when they surprise and delight. And yet it's so rare. And I think that's often the challenge, is that I think people think of the competition as very hard to beat. Whereas when you approach it like that, it actually becomes much easier because you say, no, I'm going to play this specific game at the highest level I can possibly play it. One of the things that I know that people then struggle with is, so we've talked about like how to free up the time, we've talked about where they should be spending their time, is creating a set of services and using their personal brand to create that leverage. People tend to get pretty nervous, and I know that we've both been asked this question at events, like, if I focus around building myself as the brand, doesn't that mean the business is reliant on me? And so how can I make sure that the business has value without me in it? How can I make sure that I'm able to step away from direct customer contact? What's your view on that?
Yeah. Well, my view is actually a pretty simple one. And that is that you shouldn't even be thinking, you shouldn't even be contemplating the idea of stepping away from day-to-day operations or out of the view of customers for X amount of years. And that changes from one business level or to one niche to another, obviously, right? But like, you need to be in the day-to-day. You need to be customer-centric and customer-focused for a certain period of time. For me, it ended up being about 6 years before I was able to step away from two different businesses that we were running in tandem to each other. For you, it might be half that time. Maybe you'll need more, right? It's always very different. But the bigger question to ask here, above and beyond everything, is when the time does present itself for you to step away day to day and be less customer centric, is there a proper legacy plan in place for your business and for ultimately the impact that you've built up? If there isn't, then you're not ready to step away. Mm. You might not have to be in the office every day. You might not have to turn up on every meeting on Zoom. You might not have to talk with every customer anymore. But unless you've got a legacy play in place where you can truly set away and your SOPs are in place, you've got management that you can genuinely, you genuinely know that they're loyal to, that you can trust and rely upon. Maybe you have to, give them profit share of some variety, possibly even bring them on board as a, a relatively small based partnership. Like, there's a lot of different moves you have to make before you can fully step away from things. So that's kind of like the bigger picture off to one side. The smaller picture, and I guess probably like the more direct question is, well, what if I build a business based around my personal brand and then I want to sell it? Mm. I want to exit. That's what the cool kids are saying all the time now, right? I'm going to exit.
No, we don't sell it, we exit.
You're selling it is what you're doing, right? But but then I also had quite an interesting discussion a few weeks ago with somebody about that term exit. And it got me thinking about it a little bit, because exit actually doesn't really mean selling your business anymore. It probably always did up until quite recently, I think, in the majority of most entrepreneurial mindsets, right? But now when you exit from your business, there could be a number of different ways that you exit. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're selling the business and getting out that way. Possibly you've got a family member, like a child that you might be handing the business off to. That's a, your legacy moment. Like, my daughter, Chloe, is our COO at Upreneur. She's just 26, almost 27 years old, but she's worked with us straight out of university. And now she's running Upreneur as one of our brand-based businesses. And so I'm slowly but surely removing myself from Upreneur in terms of marketing and sales and things like that. And she's bringing herself more and more front and center. So I've not exited from it, but I kind of am at the same time. And I think it's a really interesting conversation to have, because a lot of people overthink this, I think. You know, there are other ways to be able to kind of exit your business without having to just sell it. But bottom line is bottom line, and the numbers never lie, as I always say. If your business is healthy, if your business has reliable, recurring revenue on a regular basis coming in, and you've got a good track record behind you, I truly believe that that business is still 100% sellable, even if it's still being built off of your personal brand. Because as long as the person that's buying it gets it and understands what they need to do to be able to take it up to the next level, then it should remain a healthy business.
Yeah, agreed. And I think, Yeah, however you've used your personal brand to kind of grow the business, whether it's, you know, being the face of it and doing marketing and being all over social media, or whether it's being the face for fronting up the sales and getting some big deals in, or whether it's being the person delivering whatever the service is and being front and center, like, you know, mastermind programs and so on. I can see how, exactly as you say, once you've built it to a certain level, it's about the financials, it's about the recurring and so on. And also, once you've built it to a certain level, you're not able to run the business day to day based only on you. It's not about that. And being, you know, the youpreneur, being the face of it, isn't about doing all of the doing, as we've talked about, like where you're spending time. Yeah. And so by the time you're at that point, as you say, it's like, it's more bread and butter stuff for businesses. It's recurring revenue. It's customer churn rates and, right, you know, and upsells, it's... and processes for making sure that selling and delivery all happens regardless of whether you're ill or on holiday or whatever.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Because you should be able to step away. This is like the way I define being a business owner is not running a business day to day. When you're a true owner of a business, you should be able to step away from that business for prolonged periods of time. I'm not talking about a long weekend. I'm talking about a month, 6 weeks. Like, I take a 6 week sabbatical every single year through August into the middle of September. That's a true business ownership role. Nothing breaks. No fires take off. Nobody drops the ball. Everybody knows what they need to do in those 6 weeks. And when I look at one of our other businesses, Virtual Staff Finder, which is a virtual assistant recruiting company based in the Philippines, where we kind of, it's almost like match.com for like busy, stressed out entrepreneur and experienced VA in the Philippines kind of thing. When I look at that, we opened the doors to that business in 2010. It's now 2024. Yet I have had absolutely nothing to do with the day-to-day running of that business since 2018.
Nice.
Nothing at all. I used to go on podcasts weekly. I used to keynote quarterly. I used to, you know, do webinars monthly for Virtual Staff Finder to sell that service. And I've not done any of it. Nothing at all for probably 7 to 8 years. And yet, it's still a multi six figure business.
Yeah.
So you can step away from it and it can still run on its own, you know?
Yeah, nice. That's really good. And one of the other fears that I think people have around sort of building that personal brand is around how much of themselves to kind of show in it. And I think that there's kind of two levels to that. One is, you know, how much of them to be. And I think people worry about, you know, the real me and people judge that. But I think also there's an issue around like social media and like how much of your personal life do you show and what does that mean and so on. What's your view on that?
Well, I think if you're worried about what, I think if you're worried about what people are going to say about you on the internet, then you shouldn't be on the internet. You know what I mean? Like, just stay off the internet. I think that, you know, everybody will have their own level of comfort when it comes to how much of the personal they share in the building and the scaling of their personal brand business. Like, you know, I know some people that would never think about ever showing a photograph or sharing a video of their child on social media, for example. In fact, actually, one of my very good friends, she's in the health industry. She's a health business coach. She helps people who are building health businesses, and she's amazing at what she does. I think her son now is 3 years old, I think. Mm-hmm. And although she has shown images of him on the internet, his face is always covered.
Yeah.
And I think that's absolutely acceptable. No one can say anything to a parent about protecting their child, right? And so, you know, you make these decisions. You know, I like to walk and talk when I'm on social quite a lot. And I'll be out on my property here in Cambridge and I'll show, you know, my bonsai trees, you know, and I'll, you know, show, you know, bird feeding stations because we're rewilding certain spots of our property here. Like, I'll do these things, but I'll never show my car number plates and I'll never show my front door or anything like that. Like, you know, so I think you've got to be quite aware of just how much you're sharing and how you're sharing it as well. But equally, if you decide that this is the business model that you want to follow, then you have to share some of your personal life. You have to share some of your personality, and your personality makes up a lot of what you are in your personal life as well. So I'm not saying that you've got to show, you know, everything you do all day long, like some of these, you know, vloggers and whatnot on YouTube. But what I am saying is that, you know, if you want to build a business based around your personality, you've got to show it. And that means showing people what you're doing and when you're doing it. And I'm not saying you've got to show them, you know, the avocado and salmon on sourdough that you have for lunch. But I mean, like, you know, show them your shoe collection, show them your handbag collection, show them your collection of, you know, Lego. If you're a Lego fan, you know, interject a certain amount of your personality in what you do. For example, and this kind of backfired on me a little bit, but in a good way.
Yeah.
I shared probably about 5-6 years ago on an Instagram live that I was a collector of very good single malt and small batch American bourbon.
Yeah.
And I showed a certain amount of my collection. It's a good collection, but I showed a certain amount of it. And before I know what's happening, we have our a PO box virtual office set up for mail and everything. I'm getting bottles of scotch sent to me. So I think a lot of people that follow me, they either figured I'd even got a major drinking problem, or very possibly I was just a bit of a connoisseur. I like to think that I'm more towards the latter, but the fact is, like, you know, you show a little bit of your, the stuff you like. Mm. You know, people want to know what fires you up and what gets you excited. And so you've got to find that sweet spot, I think. Bit of a rambling answer to your question, but I think maybe still useful.
I think that's good, because I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with, and I have as well. And I'm, by the way, I'm very tempted to show some of my single malt and single cask whiskey selection over there. So just anyone listening, you can send it over. It's all good.
And I don't believe it. I don't believe it. If it's true, you need to show some, you see, because otherwise you're just trying to get free scotch.
Oh, no, you want to see some of these whiskies?
Yeah, go grab two of your favorite bottles. Go. Let's see what you've got cooking.
There we go. difficult to pick favorites, but...
Okay.
I'll tell you what, I'll grab that one because that's interesting.
I can actually hear bottles clinking here, so this is good.
So here we go. Hang on. This first on the De-Stressing Business podcast is getting into actual whiskey. So...
yeah.
I've got Scotch Malt Whiskey Society one here, which is a single cask, which is Confident High Wire Artist, which is one of my favorites. That's a curly single cask malt, which I particularly like.
Okay. I'm already impressed.
This one's not a single cask, but it is a single malt, but it's actually an unpeated one from India, down in Goa, which I actually came across when I did an Indian whiskey tasting with a friend of mine during lockdown. We did, like, I bought us both these sets of these drams that we had outside, you know, when you had to be outside and you could have two of you together.
Yeah.
And we did that with an iPad dialed into the master distiller at the Paul John whiskey place.
Wow. Okay. So you're next level, man. This is good. So now everybody, is this the first time you've ever...
Yeah, only accidentally in the past. Oh, this one's... So this is a...
Is that a bourbon?
Single cask. It's Invergordon, which is little-known whiskey in Scotland, which is actually a massive distillery, but normally everything's blended and put in other blends. But this is a 28-year-old single cask that was bottled by a guy who actually lives locally. And for a while, he ran a single cask bar in my hometown and then sadly closed down 11 months later for obvious... marketing and commercial reasons in a town of the size that I'm in with 20,000 people. But I was briefly a member for those 11 months and so ended up with some amazing whiskies. So,
okay, so this is very, very important to point out. I just want to point out here. Yeah. So for you guys that are either listening or watching this now, you've probably listened to Alexis talk to a whole bunch of guests, right, over the course of him doing this show. And you will continue to do in the future, no doubt. But here we are. He has just shared this very personal connection and love to one particular thing that he clearly, as a whiskey lover myself, he clearly has a good knowledge of what he's talking about here. So this is something that all your listeners now know about you that they never knew about before. And those folks that are in your audience that even have just a passing appreciation for fine spirits are now that much deeply connected to you. And that is what I'm talking about right there.
Love
that. That's why we share these little moments.
That's really nice. And I think that's clear because I think it helps answer something I've seen before, which is like, you know, why? How is it relevant? Like, you know, if I've got an accountancy business, why is it important that I share my love of whiskey or of a particular football team or whatever? And I think, as you say, it ultimately comes down to connection, which is the whole point of Youpreneur, right? It's the fact that actually people don't connect with a brand and a corporate-y website in the same way as they do with a human. And you're the most interesting sort of quirky human that you can bring to the party because you know all your ins and outs and weird quirks and whatever and can share them. So I think I get that.
And everybody wants to get, well, I would like to think, look, the world is a pretty messed up place, right? Mm-hmm. But like overall, the people that I know, love and appreciate, I want to know them. Like the people that I genuinely want to align myself with, both in work and life, I want to know them. Mm. I don't need to know every sordid detail, but I want to know what makes them tick. One of my clients is a big dog lover. She's got three dogs. And when she joined our roundtable mastermind, I always send a welcome gift to our new members. Sometimes it's a bottle of wine or champagne or possibly a nice set of truffle chocolates or a collection of books or whatever it is, whatever they're kind of interested in. Mm-hmm. Once I found out that she was a dog lover, I subscribed to a years-long subscription for a doggy treat company. Nice. So every month she gets a reminder of what she means to me when those sets of treats turn up each month for her dogs. That's personal branding on steroids right there.
Yeah. Talk about surprise and delight, right?
There's a very, very, very good book that you and everybody else should read out there on the subject of sending gifts and, you know, surprising and delighting. It's a book called Giftology, and you can get it on Amazon. Giftology. I can't remember the author's name now.
I'll put the link in the show notes. Yeah.
Yeah. Many, many years ago, McLaren, based over in Toronto, mentioned the book to me when we were at a mastermind together. I picked it up, just kind of ordered it on Amazon when I was there in Canada, came back, got back to the UK. It was here waiting for me, and I devoured it in a matter of days. And it just shows you how interesting the psychology of giving as well as receiving gifts really is to the way that we perceive relationships and what they really mean to us.
Really nice. Yeah, I buy into that. And gift giving is something that historically I've really struggled with. Like, I don't know what it is, whether it's, you know, the sort of classic male, not very good at gift buying, or whether it's more a sort of aspect of my slightly autistic nature that makes that tricky. But I think, yeah, a book that tells me how to embed gift giving as part of my services and marketing and sales, I think might be quite an effective way of getting that working for me.
It's an interesting thing, isn't it? Like, and you know, we could go back and forth on this sort of stuff for hours. Anybody that's interested in business and connections and serving people in the right way, I think can geek out over this stuff for hours and hours and hours. But like, here's the way I look at it, right? Like I could run, you know, Facebook ads at the amount of £500, for example. And, you know, I might get a whole bunch of leads out of those. And I might, you know, convert one high paying client in to one of our products or services, right? So let's say that lead cost me $100 or rather $500, because that's what I've spent on those leads. So if that's the case, if I'm at an event speaking and I come off stage and somebody makes a beeline for me to comment on something that really resonated with them, more fool me if I don't get their details and spend $100 sending them a really cool gift.
Nice.
Because whether they do business with me next week or whether they do business with me a year down the line, that's still 20%, quote unquote, cheaper than what it would cost to find a person like that via paid advertising. And the fact that I've met them in person and then gone ahead and sent them a gift before they've even become a client, just to say, lovely meeting you at the event last week. I heard you mention this, so I thought you might like this. And before you know what's happening, that relationship's off to the races.
That's fantastic. Cool. Well, I think there might be some other impacts of this conversation then. I mean, I'm going to be making a beeline for you next time I see you speak, Chris, just to remind you that I really like single cask whiskies and that I got a lot from
your presentation. That will only work if you bring some of it with you so we can share a dram or two with each other.
Sounds good. That's what I will do. Marvellous. Well, to close us out then, reflecting on your journey, reflecting on the experiences that you've had helping many entrepreneurs to scale their personal brand businesses and so on, what would be the most important piece of advice you'd offer?
I think it's very simple, but it's also an extremely overrated strategy, I think, or underrated strategy rather. And that is that just to be yourself, but be yourself all the time, like no smoke and mirrors. What you see is what you get. You've earned your stripes, show why, be a value, you know, be a person of value and interest, but most importantly, just be yourself at all times. Because then when somebody does make a decision to ultimately go into business with you, whether it be buying your book or hiring you to speak at an event or hiring you as a coach or a mentor or buying one of your coaching products or whatever it is, once you get to the point of showing them who you are and what you're all about and what you stand for, the moment they buy one of those products, that's the beginning of a relationship, I feel, that should last for a long, long time and should genuinely mean something. Like, relationships should be treasured. They shouldn't be used. And you can't expect to build the right kind of relationships in this world by not being anything but just good old you. And so with me, what you see is what you get. No matter where you meet me, no matter where you see me, I'm always just good old Chris. And I think people can resonate with that because, like I said at the beginning of this chat, we want to do business with other people. We don't want to do business with logos or with brands. We're humans. We want to work with other humans.
Perfect. Yeah, 100%. Love it so much. Thank you so much, Chris. Chris, thank you for joining me. You've been absolutely amazing. I highly recommend that people check out Chris's amazing books. I'll make sure there's links in the show notes, including Rise of the Youpreneur, if you're interested in like exactly how to build a business around your personal brand. Chris, you've also got your podcast, and which is, I believe, the Profitable Personal Brand Expert Business. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. And also anywhere else that you'd recommend that people learn more from you, other resources that you'd highlight?
Well, I wouldn't be much of a personal brand business owner myself if I didn't have chrisducker.com, would I? So that's where you want to go.
Fantastic. Excellent. Well, I recommend that people go check out Chris. I 100% testify to Chris's statement there where wherever you meet him, whenever you meet him, it's awesome Chris showing up exactly as he is. I've had the great pleasure to meet him multiple times now and always had a fantastic experience. I've also seen him talking to other people at events when they create that line. I hadn't realized that you were sending gifts to all of them afterwards. So you'll need to spend some time doing that. But Chris, thank you for joining me on De-Stress Your Business. It's been great talking to you.
Yeah, my pleasure.